Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now, become a snack subscriber, and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com, that's MauiNuiVenison.com, and use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast, called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore. All right, Corey, go ahead and put that bear fat in.
All of it?
Yep. Let's. We just need to keep it stirring. So we're in Montana, and we've got a fire going. We're on the side of the creek here. We just put about 7 pounds of fresh Montana spring color phase bear fat into a Dutch oven, and maybe the most apropos bear grease render of all time. We're going to render bear grease while we are talking. So, welcome to the Bear Grease Render, everybody. Like I said, we're in Montana, and I'm joined by two special guests. I have to my left, Bear John Newcomb, my son.
Hello.
How's it going, Bear?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Bear's got a story to tell us here in a little bit. And then Corey Calkins of Meat Eater. Corey, good to have you, man.
Thanks for having me.
We're creekside. We've been bear hunting in Montana. And so for anybody that this would be their first Bear Grease Render, the Bear Grease Render is when we generally talk about the previous week's podcast. On this episode, this is in the field Bear Grease Render, which is a little bit different. We're going to talk about the adventures that we've had over the last 5 days. This is the fifth day of our Western spring bear hunt. Corey, you've been doing this for a long time though, right?
Yeah, I sure have, up in these parts anyway.
Bear, this is your first spring bear hunt.
Yep.
Western spring bear hunt.
Yep.
What are your impressions so far, man?
I like it. I mean, it's a lot different than hunting back in Arkansas. I mean, like, everything's bigger, so like the hunting is just way different.
Yeah. Big mountains.
Yep.
Big mountains. We're gonna talk some about our last Genuine Outlaw series. We're going to talk about that, but we're also going to talk about that on the next render. But I want to dive into our hunt this week. Corey, this is my seventh Montana spring bear hunt in, I think, 9 years. I think it's my seventh hunt. No, seventh hunt in 8 years, because once I came twice. Last year I came twice to Montana. So I'm counting that as two different hunts. Man, you've guided back in here for a long time.
That's right.
Tell me what you used to do before you worked for Meat Eater, and then I want to hear what you do for Meat Eater.
Well, I guided back here for 8 years. Fishermen in the summer. I should say spring bear hunters, and then fishermen all summer. And then come September, we'd do 8 weeks of archery and then rifle elk hunters too.
Yeah.
Guided back here for a while and then moved down to Bozeman and guided fishermen and hunters down around Bozeman for about 7 years after that. So
yeah,
been guiding for about 15 years till I started for Meat Eater.
You started for Meat Eater a year and a half ago?
Correct.
And now, Bear, did you know that Corey guided for a big fancy elk outfit in Montana? And you guided, I mean, like over 30 successful elk hunts for hunters. Is that right?
Yeah.
What years would that have been?
2014 to 2020.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell the name of that place or no?
It's the CA Ranch. Yeah, Climbing Arrow Ranch. It just sold to some new owners. So the history of it has changed quite a bit just in the last year. It's not a secret place anymore. It's a well-known ranch for both its history and the elk hunting. Guys like Will Primos, who's been on the show, has hunted there.
Yeah, so we're up here talking, and Corey had heard Will Primos on this podcast. And he was like, yeah, I know Wilbur Primos. I guided him for elk.
Oh, Wilbur.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? Now, you were guiding back into, you were doing horse trips, mule trips, back into some pretty wild places.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been around equine and mules a lot.
My whole life, yeah. I grew up with them. My parents had a couple horses, more show horsing. They'd throw my little cute blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid on a bay horse and ride me around, and we'd win some blue ribbons just for showing.
Oh, nice.
And then my parents did some trips back in here on horseback. So I grew up with them. And then they got a little expensive as I got older. So we got rid of horses. But then when I started working back here, started using horses and mules, packing on them.
So our hunt this week, we're just on foot. I think twice I've brought mules for spring bear hunting into Montana. But this year we're just on foot, and we've walked. How much do you think we've walked over the last 4 days, Corey?
I'd say we've averaged about 10 miles a day, so over 40 miles, 40 to 50 miles.
Yeah, we've covered some ground. Baird, were you a little bit wore out after day three?
Yes.
I got to say, though, these Arkansas boys do pretty well in the Montana mountains, I will say.
Well, Bear's getting big enough now where he can outwalk and outhunt me, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But
I can see that.
It took him a while to get there, but he's there now. We've got this, we've got a big Dutch oven that's just full of bear fat. We're going to have to get this fire hotter. That's for sure. Yeah, move that. So we got our grate over the fire, and we really want to get that fire right up under that pot. It's got to be pretty darn hot to render it down. Okay, we got to tell. So the way that we're hunting these bears up here is that there's a lot of heavily forested area, not a lot of openings, but there's a lot of logging activity. And so we're walking roads. So these roads green up before everything else. And it's no secret about how in the Northwest people hunt bears. In the spring, there's no berries. The berries haven't ripened yet. There's no hard mast, because hard mast grows all summer and then is ready in the fall. Pretty much what these bears have to eat is insects that are coming out, and then green vegetation, and then anything they could catch as far as meat, like they might catch an elk calf or a moose calf, or find winter kill carrion type stuff. That means, though, that these roads create openings in the timber where green grass grows, vegetation grows. There's these clear cuts. Wherever the sun can reach the forest floor, there's going to be green stuff. And man, there's no rhyme or reason. Well, there is rhyme or reason, but you're basically just trying to cover as much possible ground as you can, find bear sign, and then hunt in those areas. And bear sign would be bear scat along roads. You might see bears from a long ways if in places there's small openings where you can see stuff. But this week it's been pretty wild because we've seen, Corey, how many bears have we seen?
13, I believe. Well, and 14 if you count the one that I was 30 yards from but couldn't see last night.
Yeah,
so, and so 14.
Okay, 14 bears, and give me the breakdown on the species of bears. You're getting smoked. Corey's getting smoked out.
Well, we've seen 3 grizzlies from camp. 4, 5 grizzlies, and the rest were black bears.
So 5 grizzlies, and then so 9 black bears.
Yeah.
5 grizz, 9 black bears. So let's start off by telling what happened on day 2 with the incident, as we'll call it. All right. Bear, I need some input from you on this. So it had been raining. It had been raining, and it was cold. Temperatures have been fairly cold up here, which I like for bear hunting in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been raining, and right at last light, we found a road that we liked, Corey liked, and we decided to walk it. We started walking it, and we found small amount of small, what we believe to be a small black bear based upon the gauge of the bear scat and the size of it. It looked like a small black bear. But then as we're walking, we're probably a mile from the truck, and we start seeing some big grizz tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you can tell a grizz track from a black bear track by its architecture. You know, a black bear, you're typically not going to be able to see the claws, and it's kind of rounder and just typically smaller. A grizz is going to be much bigger. You're going to be able to see the claws. And this track was just evidently grizz. Did you think so, Bear?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like twice as big as a black bear track.
Yep.
Yeah, we guessed it was about 7 inches wide.
7-inch pad.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, when you're gauging bear tracks, and we tested this theory. I've done it 100 times, but we tested it again. Pretty much the width of the bear track, add 1 inch to it, and that typically gives you the square of the bear. So if it's a 4-inch track, you go 4 + 1 = 5, and so that means it's a 5-foot square bear. So if you have a 7-inch track, that's typically an 8-foot bear. It doesn't always play out just like that, but it gets you in the ballpark. And the square of a bear, my goodness, we're just digging ourselves a hole of having to explain stuff. Bear, how do you square a bear? Do you know?
You measure from claw to claw, like the wingspan of the front arms.
The bear that's the hide, a green hide of a bear.
Stretched out on the ground. And then from tip of the nose to the base of the tail, add them up together, divide them by 2.
Yep. And that gives you the square. So like a 6-foot square bear would be like a really solid, good bear. Like there wouldn't be very many sows that would square 6 foot, even though it's possible. A 7-foot bear would be a giant. I have seen with my own eyeballs in all the Canadian bear camps and all the bears I've seen and helped people skin, I've seen 1 true 7-foot bear. And so everybody and their brother that, you know, I don't know. I've seen a lot of bears, and I've only seen 1 that was a true 7-foot square bear. That's just the way it was. Like Andy Brown said, that's just the way it happened. I loved it when Annie Brown said that on about Louie Dell and Charlie turning their dogs out on October 1st. He just said, Clay, that's just the way it happened. I've only seen 1 7-foot bear. So there we are, walking the road, hour before dark. It's raining. We see grizz tracks. We start seeing a little bit of grizz scat, and we see black bear scat, which is odd because typically the grizz push out the black bear. That's the theory anyway.
Yeah, they don't like to hang out together.
Right.
As far as I've noticed.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get to the end of this road, and we're sitting there trying to decide what to do, and Bear Newcomb hears a stick pop way out in the woods, probably 75 yards away, and he says, hey, did y'all hear that? We stop. And sure enough, pop, we hear another stick pop. And Corey says, that's for sure an animal. You know, when you hear a twig snap, you know, maybe a log fell or, you know, just something.
A squirrel drop a pine cone or something. You know, you never know.
And it was 2 distinct crack. And then 20 seconds later, crack.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, there's an animal there. And then we keep listening and we're keyed up on it now. And we hear it scratching, kind of. What was it doing, like digging or something?
It sounded like a dig. Something with claws was scratching or digging.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was right away with all the bear sign thinking, bear.
So Corey goes, that's for sure a bear. But it's in such thick timber, we don't know, we can't see it. Well, I have my Phelps Predator call with me. And so I go, hey, let's predator call that thing and see if it'll come in. And what was cool is that the whole week, Corey had asked me if I'd ever been successful predator calling a bear. And I've not done it a ton, but I told him that one time in British Columbia, we called up a bear that was probably 300 yards away by blowing on a rabbit squealer and watched it come across a clear cut, like into bow range. It was a small bear. And then another time in British Columbia on a different hunt, we had a sow out in a field, Bear John Newcomb, and the sow was feeding in grass. It was a bear we didn't want to kill. We were just messing around. We are probably 80 yards from her, and we go to wailing on a predator call, and we were thinking she's going to lift up her head from that grass and just come busting into us. She literally didn't even lift her head, and I'm not exaggerating. She didn't even acknowledge us, and we're, I mean, just wailing on this thing. It, like, didn't affect her at all. And then one time in Washington, we probably made 5 or 6 sets of blowing a predator call for bear. So, you know, mixed success.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get about 5 yards behind bear and kind of tuck him up by a little spruce. Corey gets up on a bank behind some trees. We've got 2 guns. We're in grizz country. And so I pull out my bear spray, take the safety off, and have bear spray because we're in a tight quarters. You can see like 10 yards any direction.
Yeah, 10
and we got
yards.
A bear out here, and we're about to blow on a predator call. Sounds like a good idea. Man, that fat's looking good. Holy cow.
Yeah, it is. Listen Look to at this. That.
Oh, my lands. Wow. It's looking really good.
Hmm.
So, bear's ready. Corey's ready. We got 2 guns and bear spray. And I start, probably 20 seconds, I make eye contact with Corey, and I can tell he's watching a bear. And what happened?
There was a little black bear, maybe a 4-foot black bear, just bounding across the logs right for the call. And from what we could hear scratching, well, that must have been what was scratching. 20 seconds of calling, that bear was on us. In 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And bounded to the edge of the little opening we had and then just hit.
How close was it, Bear?
He's probably like 10 yards from me.
And Bear has his gun up, and pretty much if it had stepped in the opening, I don't think we would have gauged much. He probably would have just shot it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so you got your gun up. Bear's come running in. And now what did you tell me after that? You said it's kind of, unnerving.
Yeah, I mean, like, because you're right behind me. And so, like, the bear is, I mean, he's coming for the predator call. He's wanting to eat something. And it sounds like, I mean, you can't tell how big he is. You just hear brush cracking. So I don't know if a...
It could have been a grizz.
Yeah, I don't know if an 8-foot grizzly is about to bust out of the brush 10 yards in front of me or if it's going to be a...
Or a lion.
Or a black bear.
Yeah.
So...
And so here comes the brush crashing. Corey goes, there's a bear. I can't see the bear. And, okay, you take it from here, Corey.
Once I could see it bounding and I could tell what it was, I whispered, black bear. And both Bear John and I raise our guns up. We both had tags, both ready to fill it. And the bear just came to the edge and stopped, like it hit a brick wall. It must have winded us or seen us standing there. Came to that brick wall, stopped, and just turned and bounded the same speed away as it did coming in. And took 5 steps into the woods, and out of nowhere, a big silverback grizzly bear chasing right to left, chases that little black bear right up into a tree 40 yards away from us. I mean, the whole scene was 20, 30 yards into the woods, but it chases the black bear how high into the tree? That's 20, 30 feet up a tree. That little black bear was scared to death. And so were we. So this little black bear comes bounding, and I whisper, black bear, black bear, black bear. When it stopped and turned around, and I knew we couldn't get a shot, 2 seconds later, grizzly, 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 grizzly.
It was intense.
And just Clay and I and Bear, we just started screaming, hey, bear, get out of here, bear. It went from, all right, we're going to get a shot here, to we need to protect our lives, it felt like. I mean, the way it was running across the woods like that. Whew.
And it was the wildest thing because all you know, you always feel like if there's black bear around, there's not a grizz around. And it is an incredible mystery why this grizz and that black bear were within. No way they couldn't have been more than 100 yards apart.
Yeah.
Because we didn't call for 30 seconds.
The woods are that thick, though. They could easily be coming down parallel to each other.
Right.
Without knowing each other. It was wet. There was no wind. The scent kind of stays around you. It's possible they didn't know each other were there.
And so, I mean, Corey just said it, but basically this bear comes running in. We're about to shoot it. Corey says, black bear, so we're just like about to shoot. Our bear's thinking about it. And then he goes, grizz, grizz, grizz. And at that point, bear clicks the safety off his gun. I start yelling, hey bear, hey bear, hey bear, hey bear, and kind of step out where I can see good. And the black bear shoots 30 feet up a tree, probably 50 yards from us. And I look out and I see the grizz turn and just make eye contact with me out there at about, I felt like it was a bow shot away, you know, 40 yards.
Those beady little eyes just looking through the dark timber at you. I can only imagine.
It was such a wild scene because there's this grizz standing there and there's a black bear in the tree right above it and bear's trying to shoot the black bear. Bear's like, should I shoot it? Should I shoot it? And I absolutely would have let him shoot it. But I was thinking, is this smart to shoot a black bear? Because we're going to have to skin this black bear back here. That was my thought. While we know for a fact that there's a grizz right there.
The black bear would have landed on the grizzly bear.
Literally.
Yeah.
And so bear has his gun up and he's saying, Dad, I got my crosshairs on that black bear. You wanted to shoot it bad, didn't
you? Yep.
And then, but we're yelling at the grizzly bear. So we're, hey bear, hey bear, hey bear. And so the black bear is flipping out. He ran up the tree because a grizz chased him up the tree. And now there's three humans yelling at him. And so, I mean, just no sooner than all this happened, you know, we've been talking about this for 10 minutes. This happened in the span of 25 seconds.
Absolute chaos.
And anyway, the bear's coming down the tree, and the bear gets halfway down the tree and stops, and bear says again, Dad, I can shoot, I can shoot. And I go, whoa, 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 wait, 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 wait. I just wasn't sure enough, you know?
And if you're not 100%, don't do it. And we weren't. It was just too much chaos to know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I think we made the right decision. That was day two, so we weren't, if it was day five, maybe, you know, but.
Yeah.
Day two, just take your time, and we weren't 100% sure. So
that was a wild, wild experience. Now, Corey, guiding one time, you had to shoot at, you know, to scare a grizz. Tell me that story.
Yeah, I had an archery hunter that I was guiding, and we parked our horses and walked up this ridge, got onto a little bench, and similar thing, heard an animal cracking in the woods, but we're elk hunting, so assuming it was an elk. I mean, that was what we were after, and very elk heavy zone.
Mm-hmm.
And we got set up without even calling or anything, without seeing anything. We just got set up to try and call this, whatever it was in, hoping it was a lone bull elk or something. It's September 10th.
Right.
And I set my client up behind a bush, 10-foot bush, big alder bush, and I backed up about 50 yards and gave one little cow-calf squeal, and whatever it was walking towards us. You could just hear it, a couple cracks here. Like, it kind of sounded like a hoof. I was just thinking, okay, here we go. Here's an elk coming in. Client was hoping for a big bull, but I was assuming he was going to shoot anything. Like, maybe it's just a cow coming in to the calf call, whatever. 20 seconds later, giant grizzly bear stands over the top of this bush. Now that bush might have been 9 feet tall. I might be over exaggerating, maybe 8 feet tall, but that bear stood a foot over the top of that bush. Wow. Now Montana grizzly bears, don't get that big, but in the moment it was a giant. That bear stands up on two legs and is looking for whatever's making that noise. Now that bear's on the other side of the bush for my hunter. Now my hunter's on, I think, a knee or two knees waiting for an elk to step out from either side.
Right,
he has no idea. This bush is so thick that he has no idea that there's a bear standing 5 yards on the other side of the bush over the top, and it's looking around. And when I see that the bear,
yeah,
I pull out my .44 revolver and fire it off in the air and just start screaming. And the bear gets down, like it turned on 2 feet, took off and went up the hill, but not out of sight, just up and stopped. Like it scared it, but it mm-hmm. it didn't leave. That was a close call for sure. I mean,
wow.
I think if he would have saw my hunter and caught him off guard like that, who knows what, it was a big boar, yeah. grizzly bear. Who knows what the bear yeah. would have done. Scared the bejesus out of that hunter though, when he's quiet, just sitting there, and all of a sudden a .44 mag goes off 50 yards behind yeah. it, scared him a little bit.
Yeah, I bet it did, but you probably saved him at minimum from a very, very close call, and maybe even from getting whooped on by a grizz. Could have happened.
It was a close call, no doubt.
We were talking earlier about black bears and grizzly, and you know, the grizzlies are typically the ones that you hear about being dangerous, and certainly I would say that that's true. I mean, they are the ones that are dangerous. But you were telling me a story just randomly this morning about a black bear that attacked a guy. Tell me that story, Corey.
Well, gosh.
Bear, Corey's got some good stories. When you spend 8 years guiding, you have a lot of good stories.
Yeah. We were floating our rafts down the river that I was guiding on, and there was a single gentleman just on the riverbank. I couldn't tell if he was tying a shoe or tying a fly on the end of his fly line. He was just sitting there up against a big boulder. And as we come up to him, we're saying, "Hey, how's it going? How long are you going to be out here? You camping?"
You're way
or what
back
are you
in
doing?
The woods. I mean, you're way away from civilization.
Yeah, we're pretty far in there. And chit-chatting. But as the boat goes around this rock and this gentleman, as we're floating downstream by him, I see a little black bear, 5.5, maybe 6 foot black bear, sniffing that rock. Like he can smell something funny. And I go, black bear, like, sir, get up. There's something sniffing right behind you. And he gets up and the bear scurries off, runs up into the woods. Didn't think much about it. It's just another, yeah. another bear, a little too close to a human, but it freaked him out for sure. Come to hear a week later, that gentleman got drug out of his tent by a black bear.
Wow.
Whether he had a Snickers bar in his tent or his toothpaste or whatever, that bear, now, don't know if it was the same black bear or not, but that person got drug out of his tent and got beat up pretty bad. If I remember right, Life Flight had to fly in and pick him up and get him out.
That was a black bear.
Mm-hmm.
And when you told me that story, I mean, it makes sense to me that it was, I mean, it had to have been the same bear. I mean, if it was that curious, I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's very ironic, regardless.
Well, what we were talking about was what's more dangerous, a black bear or a grizz. And I mean, the obvious answer is a grizzly, but there are definitely more grizzly fatalities, but there are quite a few black bear attacks, but black bears are in a much larger geographic area. I mean, exponentially larger than where grizz are, so it's not really comparing apples to apples, you know. But, Bear, what's the closest bear encounter you've had?
Probably that. The
one we just had?
Yeah.
Have you ever been bear baiting with me when we've had bears get...
I mean, I remember one time whenever I was probably like 10, we were going in on a bait, and there was already a bear there.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually remember twice that happened, and once where we were baiting, and there was kind of a bear just like probably 50 yards away from us.
Just kind of circling.
Yeah, in Oklahoma.
Do you remember the one time we had a bear? You were just a little boy, and there was a little bear at a bait, and I kind of halfway remember saying, "Hey, bear, see how close you can get to that bear," and you started stalking him. I mean, you were just a little kid, and you kind of got a little ways away from me, and all of a sudden I was like, "This is a really bad idea," and I called you back, and then I went in and stalked up pretty close. It was when we first started baiting bears pretty
was
hard.
Was it when you
heavy.
Were guiding?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I kind of remember that.
Yeah, I sent you in, and it was such a small bear, I was like, it was just kind of funny.
Uh-huh.
And then the bear wasn't afraid, and then I moved in and got about 5 yards from it. And then I remember having the initial thought, first time I ever thought it, of that's like a 125-pound raccoon. And I have incredible respect for a raccoon. And I was like, oh, I get it now. There was a time when I was like, I remember having a philosophy at one time in my life, Corey, that a 150-pound tough man ought to be able to combat a 150-pound bear. I was like, bear muscle is muscle. So if it's a 150-pound bear, other than he's got claws and teeth, you should be good. And then I've recanted that since. I think bear muscle is more legit than human muscle. Now I realize how stupid that was.
Punch him in the nose.
Punch him in the nose.
Right? It's like hitting a man in his groin, I've heard.
Really?
I haven't had to yet, but if you punch him in the nose, it hurts him.
Yeah.
That's their weak spot.
I've had a Helix Sleep mattress for over 2 years, and it is for sure the nicest mattress that I've ever slept on. I've slept much better in the last 2 years, been more comfortable than I have for my whole life. And that's true. The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids. Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes, and your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/clay and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet and won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, okay, so that was the exciting part of day two. The exciting part of day three was we decided to walk back into an area that was just kind of walk-in only, and we left the truck around 1 o'clock, would you say, guys? 1 o'clock, we leave the truck.
Yeah, pretty early in the afternoon.
And we start finding quite a bit of grizz sign. And grizz sign is just going to be like huge piles of bear scat that are just way bigger than, you know, a black bear would have.
It's usually pretty obvious. It's like the size of a horse.
Yeah.
Horse scat.
Yeah. And so We started seeing some grizz sign. We continued to do a little predator calling. We were kind of encouraged by our success with predator calling. So we had a pretty good system where I would have the bear spray out and I would be turned around behind these guys, and they had two rifles. And we started predator calling in bigger, more open areas where you could see something coming. And we probably predator called four or five more sets and never had any success, even though we did predator call at a sow and cubs that we saw. And they moved towards us slightly, but they wouldn't commit to coming in. We could see them a long ways off. So on this day, I'm getting ahead of myself, but we would later in the day see a sow with cubs.
Black bear.
Predator call at them. The sow just got real nervous and got pacing around, and she'd trot 40 yards closer to us and then stop, and the cubs would run up to her, and then she'd kind of run back, and you could tell she was just kind of confused, and she was out there about 200 yards from us and never would commit, but and we just wanted to see what she would do. But prior to that, we started seeing some bear scat in the road. And then what happened, Bear? We come around a corner and we look up, and what do we see?
It's like a almost completely blonde.
Hold on. You're missing one. The grizz.
Oh.
I don't want you to cut to the chase yet.
Before we saw the sow and two cubs. We've seen a lot of bears this week.
Yeah. We saw a grizzly bear. Probably 80, 90 yards away.
Yeah.
We kind of come up over a little rise. There's a grizzly 80, 90 yards away, just in the wide open. Mm-hmm. And we watch it for a little while, and finally it kind of moves off. And we let it, after we watched it for a minute, we kind of let it know that we were there, just kind of made our presence known, just kind of waved our hands a little bit.
Yeah, it didn't take much. She saw us, took off. And
that's when we hunted on up, saw the black bear sow and cubs. Mm-hmm. And then we split up for the first time in the hunt. Corey kept going down a road, and Bear and I dropped off the mountain to a lower road that we'd found on Onyx. We knew there was a road right below us, and we'd been split up. It took us probably 30 minutes, 45 minutes at most, to get down to the road, and we're making our way back to the truck, and now it's about 7 o'clock. And Bear and I are coming down this road, Corey, just beautiful green grass, which is perfect. And it was in a cut. So both sides of the road had, for whatever reason, had been cut by the Forest Service. So there was just like big openings, which is great. And around the big openings was big, dark timber. And, you know, it's getting the last 2 hours of daylight, just prime time. And you're just slipping along, just trying to see a bear before it sees you. And you're thinking it's going to be 150 yards away or 90, 100 yards away. Bear and I are just moving down through there slow. And Bear, was I pumped about that? I mean,
yes.
Was I like, what
yeah,
did I
you
say?
Were, you were saying that this is where we're going to kill a bear.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, I say that like every day we go hunting. But this one was like, this one I was a little amped up more than usual, right?
Yep.
Could you tell?
Yes.
So we're walking down this road, and this is Bear's first spring bear hunt, so I'm trying to just tell him how good this scenario is that we found ourselves in. And the bear fat is looking incredible.
Liquid gold here, folks.
So what we've done is we're gonna get back to the hunt. We gotta talk about this for a minute. We've pulled the heat off of this fat, and there's still what I would call the cracklings. Did you just eat one?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hot. Good.
Tastes like chicken. Yeah, it's hot, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's like a pork rind.
I would say the oil is light, like kind of amber-colored, and the cracklings, we'll get a little bit more liquid oil out of that. The finer that you can cut your bear fat, put it on low heat, the finer that you can cut it, the more yield of liquid bear grease, bear oil you'll get from it. All we did was we cubed up about 5 to 7 pounds of bear fat, put it in the Dutch oven, and put good heat on it. And Corey's been stirring it this whole time. And so it's now probably 80% liquid, 20% solid, and the little cracklings eventually get down to where they won't render out into liquid oil anymore. The best way, though, to do it to get the most yield of liquid oil and bear grease is to grind it. But in this scenario, we had to just dice it up into like 1-inch cubes and then just keep it stirring, keep it on good heat. And what we'll do now is we're going to let it cool down for a while, and we're going to run it through a dish towel as a filter to filter out any particles that were in there. You know, some of our meat in the field, you know, there might have been something on it. We're going to filter it through a dish towel and pour it into some jars that we have. And so we'll get some fantastic oil. But we're going to kind of let it take a little bit of heat, but we're going to let it cool down.
Cool.
So there we were, Bear John. We're walking down the road. It's prime time. We're looking out to our left at big snow-covered mountains. Walking through a road of emerald green. It was like a bear hunter's dream. It's like it being November 5th and you're setting over a bunch of good sign and in your whitetail tree stand. And you just feel like it's about to happen. I really felt like it was about to happen. Well, what happens, Bear? What happened?
Well, so we're walking down this road, and there's kind of like this little rise in the road where it kind of goes up and then drops down. And there's like a little brush pile almost to the left of the road, right even with like the peak of the rise. So we can't really see anything in that area, like, because the brush is covering it, and then there's the rise, so we can't see over that. So we come up right to the top of this little rise, and you like duck down and you're like, "Bear, bear." So I like kind of see it, and I could see that it's like blonde.
It's real confusing hunting with somebody named Bear.
Yes, especially when there's a grizz and a black bear running at you, like, "Bear, bear, no, bear, bear, bear." No, seriously.
No,
bear.
One time, Corey and I keep interrupting this story.
We'll get there.
We got to draw this out, man. You can't just spill the beans this quick.
No.
One time while we were hunting this week, all three of us are walking. We're all just scoping out the woods. It was quiet. And I was trying to say something to Bear John Newcomb. And I said, "Bear." And I remember Corey jerked his head like he thought I was saying, "Bear." Like, there's a bear.
Well, you did.
There's a slight difference between... there's a bear and bear. I mean, like, almost indiscernible. But I was like, no, I'm just trying to get him. So, okay, there we were.
Yep. And so.
So I say, "Bear."
Yeah, like saying that there's a bear. And
you
so,
knew what I was saying.
Yeah. And so I see the bear, like, right as you go down. Like, I see you go down. I see you looking over here. And I see a bear, like, probably 35 yards from us. And at first, like, I could tell it was like black bear shaped, but it looked like a grizzly. Like, yeah, I was thinking,
absolutely.
I was thinking, oh man, it's just another grizzly, which would have been cool, but, you know, we're trying to get a black bear and we've seen a lot of grizzlies at this point in the hunt.
Yeah, you had just seen one
yeah.
an hour before.
A blonde grizzly.
Yeah.
I mean, perfect. Almost the same color as yes. the one yeah. that we saw.
A grizzled grizzly bear.
Yes. And so we kind of like peek back up and you look at it and you're like, "That's a black bear," and you tell me to look at it, and I look at it, and I mean, it's definitely a black bear.
I wanted to get confirmation from him, because, you know, to hunt Montana, you have to take a bear ID, a digital bear ID test, where they show you pictures of color-faced bears and grizzly bears, and it says, "Is this a grizzly bear? Is this a brown bear? Is this?" And man, it would be hard to describe, like, unless you, when you see them, you know, and, you know, bear hunters know. It would be hard to mess up, but at the same time, this bright blonde bear, like, I did a double take, just like, golly, is that a black bear? And I wanted, and Bear was going to be the one to pull the trigger, so I wanted him to be confident too, and I trusted his judgment, and I said, "Are you sure that's a black bear?" And he said, "Oh yeah." What distinguishing characteristics?
It was just small. It was more round, just like its body, just like in general. It had
yeah,
little bigger ears, a little closer together. That's really all. I mean, it just looked like
it's,
a black
its
bear.
Its face, like if you couldn't have seen its head, you'd have thought it would have been hard to tell what it was. Its head, to me, its head was slightly darker than its body.
Yeah. And he had darker legs.
Little darker legs.
And so once
but bleach blonde on the top. I mean, like, beautiful. I mean, just glowing in the sun. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah. And so I get the gun up. There's kind of some, like, weeds in front of it.
How far is the bear?
Probably less than 35. Probably, like...
I mean, we could... It was a bow shot.
Yeah. And there's some weeds in front of it. And, I mean, I probably could have shot through the weeds and would have killed it. But I was not going to risk that. So I kind of, like, walked to the right a little. And you were telling me to shoot. But there were weeds.
Shoot.
But there were weeds. And so then it took a big step and it was clear. So...
Just free-handed.
Yep.
Just free-handed, you know. So, that close.
Yep. Shot it. Jumped up. Probably ran 15 yards and died right next to this little brush pile. And, yeah, we walked over to it. And it had a big, like, diamond crest on it. Like, it was, like, the shape of a diamond. Like, a white crest. But there was nothing in the middle. So, it was just, like...
So, it was the color phase blondish... Yeah. Brown in the middle.
Yeah. Yep.
And for real, I'm not just saying this. It's the prettiest black bear I have ever seen.
Me too.
I was shocked. But I mean, when we walked up to it and we knew what color it was because we saw it when we shot it. But then I walk up to it and bear picks up that front leg and it's got this, not just a small diamond, not like a 6-inch diamond. I'm talking like a 14-inch diamond. That goes like way down in between his front legs and way up on his chest, just this big white spot. You'll see it on my Instagram. I'll post on the Clay Newcomb Instagram a picture of the bear. I mean, just beautiful bear. I've never killed a blonde bear. I've killed multiple color phase bears, but chocolate, cinnamon-ish. But never
cinnamish.
Never a blonde bear, and then, I'll say this. Typically, in the West, you can almost take this to the bank. Typically, in the West, if you see a bright blonde black bear, usually it's a sow. I don't know why. I can't describe it, but usually the sows are the ones that are going to be super light. That bleach blonde color. So when I saw the bear, I actually thought it was probably a sow, but we looked it over and could see it so good, and it was kind of in the wide open, so I mean, we knew if it was a sow, it didn't have cubs. And when we got up to it, I said, lift that thing's legs up, and sure enough, it was a boar. And it was a good one, man. We squared it out back at camp, and it was 6'3" wingspan.
Yep.
And then 5'8" nose to tail.
Yep.
So it ended up squaring just under 6 foot. So if you divided those two numbers, it ended up squaring 5'10.5" is what we decided.
That's a Western bear hunter's dream bear right there. Really is.
For up here, that's a great... I mean, if it had been a solid black bear, we'd have been thrilled just even at the size of it.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was a colored bear like that was just... off the charts, man. Mm-hmm. Off the charts.
It's a rare, rare bear.
Yeah. And we thought that, like, whenever I asked you, like, what you'd think it would square, at first, like, when we just first walked up to it, you said, like, it'll probably be, like, a little bit above 5 foot. Yep. Once we started dragging it out, started skinning it, you said, like, maybe 5.5. And then once we had it, like, stretched out in the back of the truck, then it just, like, It just got bigger and bigger.
Usually they get smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, so Bear and I decide. So we're now in Grizz Country Deluxe, and we've got a bear on the ground. And so we knew we needed to work quick, and it fell in a little bit of a brushy spot. So I said, hey, let's drag this thing into that wide open right out there where we'll skin it. And so he and I start dragging the thing, and it was all we wanted to drag. And that's when I thought, man, this dude may be bigger, a little bit bigger than I think, you know. I would guess the bear weighed in the 200-pound range.
Yeah.
You know, and for a Western bear, that's a fantastic bear.
That's a dandy.
I've weighed a lot of bears, Corey, and it, man, I could make jokes all day. I've written articles about it, about how typically people are at least 30% off on their estimation of weight.
Hmm.
If somebody says it's 200, it's probably 30% off of that. That's just my assessment of watching the world.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely is anybody under that. And honestly, the bear was, I'd say, from 180 to 200. Now, counting the 30%, I'm hoping that's not 30% off. But
well, those packs were sure heavy. With all the meat, the hide, and the head.
Yeah.
You guys were coming out heavy.
So Corey had separated from us, and so we go to breaking down the bear immediately. I mean, we take a few cell phone pics, and we know it's getting dark, and we're 4 miles from the truck. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, you know, we got to be watching for grizz. So I pull out my bear spray, keep the lid off, the safety off. We go to skinning the bear. And we get it broke down in probably 45 minutes or so and get it in our packs. And off we go to meet you and meet up with you. And anyway, incredible hunt. And yeah. Since that time, Corey and I have hunted a little bit. Well, we've hunted a fair bit since that time, but hadn't killed one since. So
it's gotten a little warm, so our time frame's a little bit narrower. It was wet and cold the first 3 days, and now it's been warm and dry. So it's been, in my opinion, a little harder to find them when it's warm and dry like it is. So we've done well this week.
Yeah,
seen a lot of bears.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the Genuine Outlaws episode number 2, but I don't want to go into much of it, guys. I just want to touch on it. I know both of you guys have listened to it, and this is a bear grease render in the field where we're literally rendering bear grease. And I want to talk about this podcast with the render crew from back in Arkansas too. But Corey, you listened to it. What'd you think, man?
Intriguing subject number one. I mean, and brave subject. Nobody's really talked about this sort of thing. You know, there's movies and books of outlaws and bad guys, but nobody's really dove in and operated on it like you are.
Just in the hunting space, is that what you
mean?
Yeah,
well, in the hunting space. Yeah, exactly. Outlaws, poachers, what have you.
Yeah.
So it's been an intriguing topic, and I love that you're diving into it like you are.
Yeah. You know, that it was, we talked about this extensively, but in the past renders and even on the podcast, but I kind of want to be true to the culture of hunting, of rural America. And I'm telling you, people where I grew up wanted to talk about Louis Dell and Charlie Edwards. And so did I. And so here I have this podcast where we talk about all things hunting, and I'm diving into these little nuances inside of hunting and just trying to figure out kind of what makes us tick and what's special and what is the culture of hunting. And obviously poaching and outlawing is a negative thing in any context, but I was just really, really had questions of why these guys kind of held the positions that they did inside of our community and why we were so intrigued by them. And I still don't have all the answers for that.
Hmm.
But
you may never find the answers.
But they were definitely super interesting brothers. Bear, what did you think, man?
I thought it was interesting too. I remember like you and Pawpaw talking about them, like just how they... A lot of those stories that were on the podcast, I remember hearing from you and Pawpaw, but yeah, I thought it was interesting. They had to be like really good hunters,
mm-hmm.
I feel like. Because,
yeah,
I mean, like,
they were.
We hunt in that area all the time, and like the fact that they could kill more turkeys than were legal to me. I mean, I know there were more turkeys back then, but still, right. to me, seems like you'd have to be a really good hunter.
Yeah.
Because we can hardly kill one.
Yeah. Man, if we were trying to be outlaws, we'd have a hard time. We'd be like, doggone it, I can't kill over my limit for anything. Poachers, we need to make a movie called Poachers Gone Bad, where a couple of guys go out, and inspired by the Bear Grease Genuine Outlaws podcast series. Mm-hmm. They're like, doggone it, man, we're going to be poachers. And they go out and they can't kill a thing. They like try to break every game law. This is a joke, people.
Yeah.
This is a joke. Bear, did listen to this make you want to be an outlaw?
No.
Okay, good. Just checking. Just checking. Man, my dad, if Gary Newcomb were here, he's a guest on The Render often. He did a good job with me he exposed us to that stuff. And I said at the beginning of the podcast that Dad, he instilled me with a value system that, I mean, I've not always upheld to. I mean, but I knew breaking game laws wasn't the thing to do or something I was interested in going out and doing on purpose. But at the same time, he exposed me to all this stuff and, I think it was really valuable to me to see him, and he really did, man. He was influential to me in a lot of ways when it came to people, because he dealt with so many people, and when he came home, those are the stories he would tell about the people he'd met, and it just, I don't know, I probably just was sitting there as a kid, not saying much, he probably didn't even know that I was being impacted by a lot of that stuff, but that's the beauty of kind of father and son relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what else do you think, Corey? Anything else? What else stood out to you? This is kind of like an abbreviated render as we talk about the Genuine Outlaw series.
I mean, who was it? Neil took the words right out of my mouth, describing them similar to Robin Hood, how they were poaching all these animals, but they didn't waste a thing, and they were giving them to the needy, the less able, who couldn't get out and hunt, you know?
Yeah.
Like helping people out at the same time. Breaking laws, being unethical, if you were to describe it, but helping people out at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see those two being like Robin Hood and Little John.
Yeah.
Walking through the forest, shooting turkeys and deer. Golly, what a day.
Beautiful rhyme. You know, when I said all that, it wasn't to justify what they did, because it doesn't justify what they did.
Mm-mm.
It's just interesting.
Very.
It's just interesting. And in their ethics when it came to wasting meat, I would say they had very high standards, especially for the time when it came to wasting meat. And does that mean I'm trying to say it was okay for them to poach? No, I'm just saying it was interesting.
Well, you wish ethical hunters had that same drive to utilize the entire animal. There's many people who only get one deer tag, one elk tag, but they don't take all the meat. They don't cook up those deer or elk shanks. You know, they don't know about it. They don't.
Yeah.
And it sounds like these guys, even though they were breaking laws, they were somehow on the bright side of things at the same time. There was a dark side and a bright side.
Well, and then I was really, I tell you what, we're going back to the render pot. Let's go ahead and take that off of there, Corey.
Okay.
And let's just put the Dutch oven lid on it so it doesn't get ash in it. I think we've rendered it down. It's probably over 80% liquid. We're just going to let it cool in this pot before we pour it into our jars. But I'm going to guess we've got over a gallon. Would you say we've got you think that's probably a gallon? I'm envisioning pouring a gallon milk jug in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a gallon.
More than a gallon.
It's close.
So, no, I was interested in, I asked Stoney, I said, hey, Stoney, do y'all have some deer heads from your uncle and dad?
Hmm.
I envisioned them just having a barn just full of deer horns. And to be honest with you, I wasn't going to put that on the podcast. I wanted to go see them. I mean, these guys were deer hunters, too. I mean, their whole life. I mean, like, serious deer hunters. And Stoney says, "Oh no, they didn't keep any horns."
Wow.
And I was like, "What? Didn't keep any horns?" I mean, when you hear poacher, you think, "Oh, somebody that's wanting to shoot the biggest buck and, you know, brag on what a big buck he killed."
Around here, people, yeah, anywhere, I guess, they shoot animals and you just see a decapitated critter because that's what they were after, was the trophy.
Right.
You know?
And does that make it right to poach? No.
No.
And then the one time that they turned somebody in, and that would have been funny. Like, in our community, like, if you would have heard Ludell and Charlie turned in somebody, the Game and Fish, I mean, people would have laughed at that, you know, that these guys were turning someone in. But the one time they turned somebody in was when they found, behind a deer camp, they found, like, four deer that just the back straps and horns had been taken. Hmm. And they were like, nah, this isn't going to fly. They call it Game and Fish. Does that make it right, Bear?
Nope.
It just makes it what? Interesting.
Yep.
That's what it does. It's just interesting. And I always like it when I don't know, I just feel like just everybody's got a story and there's value inside of just about any story and just about any person's life. And I like it when we kind of can see interesting stuff inside of maybe someone that the world had labeled as a negative person. And we're going to dive into this a lot deeper. Man, do y'all have any closing thoughts on the Outlaw Podcast, Corey? Let's just start there. Outlaw Podcast, closing thoughts?
I hope you dive in and dissect if there's another duo of outlaws or
so you want some more
I want some more. Yeah,
you're going on the record.
I know this was kind of just like a tippy toe step into the subject, and I hope there's more.
Okay.
Yeah, it's intriguing.
So you weren't offended by this? Because
no,
man, it may have been just like crystal clear. Like I was confident enough to do it, but I have taken a little bit of heat because it is controversial. It's controversial to paint someone who's clearly an outlaw in any kind of positive light. And we talked about their whole lives. And so, but you want some more of it.
Yeah.
Okay. Bear, what do you think about the Bear Grease podcast? Are you a fan, or are you just kind of like, it's the dad talking?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah.
How much do you listen to the Bear Grease podcast? Honestly.
Well, since I've started driving on my own, I've been listening to it less.
I thought you were going to say more, and I was going to be really proud.
Oh, yeah.
No, because whenever I'm in the car with you, when you're driving me places, you know, we always listen to them. But
yeah,
whenever it's just me.
I listen to them to edit them, Corey.
Mm-hmm. Bear, how often do you listen to the Meat Eater podcast?
Probably never.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, that means Bear Grease must be a little better. No offense, Steve.
Oh, well, hey, great week.
What a week.
Great week. Grizz encounters, bear encounters, killed a beautiful bear, ate some great food. We're hunting in this is Corey's place, and man, thanks a ton for having us up here.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming all the way up here.
Hey, tell us, I never got to what you do for Meat Eater now. You were the what?
I was the communications coordinator, answering all the incoming emails to meateater@themeateater.com. But I just got promoted to the hunt and fish coordinator.
Okay.
Yeah, which I'm fresh at this role.
Yeah.
I'm excited to work. I'll be able to work a lot closer to the crew, Clay, Steve, Yanni. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Excellent. Well, we got some bear fat to pour into some jars, and the next Bear Grease podcast, I'm very excited about it. It's more outlaw stuff, but it's more us dissecting the American intrigue with outlaws. Not just American, the human nature's intrigue with outlaws and kind of dissecting it. I think it's going to help for me to make sense of some of this.
Yeah, I'm going to need some of that too, because that's what's intriguing. Like, I didn't realize it was an intriguing subject, but being able to delve into to that will make it.
And I may or may not have interviewed the director of the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission about poaching in Arkansas.
Cool.
You have to see if I did or not. Maybe that's just a bluff.
Hmm.
You think I'm bluffing, Bear?
Doubt it.
A bluffing bear. Get it?
Bluffing bear.
We've been bluffed at maybe once or twice this week.
Keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Amen.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.